The visit of Pope Benedict XVI to Britain was a big success in so many ways. The various venues he visited were full, the welcome was warm, he responded with smiles, and he said some very good things. I was very fortunate to be in Westminster Abbey, where he celebrated with the community there, with the Archbishop of Canterbury and with the Dean and Canons, together with a large congregation, evening prayer, or evensong, as they call it in the Anglican tradition. And it was a wonderful service, because Westminster Abbey can produce music of a very high calibre. Service which has been roughly the same for hundreds of years and is therefore well cemented into the foundations of the spiritual life and liturgical life of the Anglican Church. So that was a wonderful event, and it was a prayerful event. There were pauses of silence, there was respect, and yet there was warmth and there was devotion. Before that, we had the remarkable presentation speech that he made in Westminster Hall. Many people have commented on it was such a good thing that he was able to put into place in that public square, as they call it, the importance of allowing the voice of faith. Perhaps only he, of all the religious leaders of the world, could do it as effectively, with quiet conviction, with a sense of both sincerity and also complete confidence that what he was saying was something that it would be very difficult to deny.
There are those who would advocate that the voice of religion be silenced, or at least relegated to the purely private sphere. There are those who argue that the public celebration of festivals, such as Christmas, should be discouraged in the questionable belief that it might somehow offend those of other religions or none. And there are those who argue, paradoxically, with the intention of eliminating discrimination, that Christians in public roles should be required at times to act against their conscience.
The claim that faith has disappeared from the public square in Britain, I think, is exaggerated, partly because we have an established church, and the established church has representation in the House of Lords, partly also because among other religious faiths there are Muslims and Jews and others in the House of Lords who can speak up on behalf of their faiths, and indeed there are many Catholics there too, articulate, intelligent, sensitive and committed. So at all stages in any process of legislation, there is the opportunity for the voice of faith to be heard. But against the background of so much legislation for equality, there has also been a sense in which faith has been marginalized. And the demonstrations prior to the visit, the remarks of well-known secularists and of minority groups, or even more than minority groups, large groups representing people who feel that the Catholic Church has disenfranchised them, lost hope in them, whether they be homosexual, lesbian, whether they be victims of abuse, whether they be people who, for one reason or another, do not follow the church's teaching on contraception, even abortion or euthanasia, in a whole raft of things which the climate in Britain is moving steadily towards what I would call a utilitarian position, which is the greatest good for the greatest number. If it's good for you, then it's probably the right thing to do. And that is a moral position which is untenable from a position of faith, and particularly from within the position of the Catholic faith. So there is a moral debate going on around issues of personal morality. And the advances in medical science and the way these advances have been achieved has often produced further ethical questions, which, when raised as issues, the decision has usually sided with what one could call the secular view, which has the consequence for Catholics and those others who hold dearly to the value of life of devaluing human life, of, in a sense, doing what is good for the individual now, rather than looking to the consequences in terms of the value of each human life from conception to death. In that whole matrix of different issues coming up, and which are widely promoted in the British press and discussed in the British press, the voice of faith is not absent, but it is not as loud as it used to be. The Pope's visit, by claiming a larger role for faith in the public square, helps to put it into that perspective. And this, of course, affects other issues as well. The Pope himself referred to the economic situation, the whole question of greed, as perceived by many people, in ordinary people in Britain, when they look at the bonuses and indeed the salaries of so many of the people working in the banking sector and the financial sector, particularly in the City of London. There is such a disproportion between their financial rewards and those of so many people who are struggling to maintain their home, struggling for a livelihood, whether on low wages or on state benefits.
The inadequacy of pragmatic, short-term solutions to complex social and ethical problems has been illustrated all too clearly by the recent global financial crisis. There is widespread agreement that the lack of a solid ethical foundation for economic activity has contributed to the grave difficulties now being experienced by millions of people throughout the world.
And it is in that area where the Pope was also clear that there is an issue of natural justice. But as so often with moral teaching on financial issues, the issue of where you draw the line with matters of greed, where the issue of when is a salary disproportionate to the amount of work being done, that is an issue which, in practical terms, has to be addressed at some stage, if only as a way of providing a standard by which the good for the greater number, can be assessed as against the good for the lucky few. And there are a whole range of people in this area, whether you're talking about footballers' wages or the top footballers' wages or media people, or whether you're talking about financial wizards and the rest of it. So there are those are issues, but there are other issues too. The issue of peace and war. The Pope John Paul II pleaded that the Iraq War, the Second Iraq War, should not take place. And yet Britain went along with Mr. Bush, now seen by many, many people in Britain as the wrong decision made on inaccurate information. And that is too is a moral issue at the moment with our troops dying in Afghanistan. What are we hoping to achieve there? What is the moral issue?
These questions take us directly to the ethical foundations of civil discourse. If the moral principles underpinning the democratic process are themselves determined by nothing more solid than social consensus, then the fragility of the processes becomes all too evident. Herein lies a real challenge for democracy.
And, of course, these are difficult decisions, difficult issues for someone not actively engaged in working out the horrors that are perpetrated by Al-Qaeda, by extremists and fundamentalists who resort to violence very easily. Indeed, there was a scare during the Pope's visit itself. But in all these areas, working out the role of faith in the public square sets an agenda which will take a long time to develop the clarity, but more important, to establish the right framework in which the dialogue can take place.
The role of religion in political debate is not so much to supply these norms, as if they could not be known by non-believers, still as to propose concrete political solutions which would lie altogether outside the competence of religion, but rather to help purify and shed light upon the application of reason to the discovery of objective moral principles.
At the moment, probably the dialogue is slightly lopsided. The cause of minority groups, the issues of moral principle, and the huge suffering of individual people who are at the sharp end, all makes for a difficult mix in order to try and to find, on the one hand, legislation which is sensitive to needs, but also upholds moral principles, and at the same time doesn't open up the possibility of exploitation in the years to come. So it is a difficult agenda, but the Pope was right to raise it.
I would suggest that the world of reason and the world of faith, the world of secular rationality and the world of religious belief need one another and should not be afraid to enter into profound and ongoing dialogue for the good of our civilization.
How far it will be taken in practice is the question that we will have to wait and see. But that he had the courage and the clarity of thinking to present it to the British people through that speech in Westminster Hall was something that was very necessary for Britain to hear, and it is gratifying to see how many people reacted to it and responded affirmatively to it. But responding affirmatively doesn't produce a solution. The solutions in different cases, in different areas, as I've tried to show, has to come with a lot of careful thinking, hard work and sensitivity, in which, yes, dogmatic principles do have a part to play, but they also have to be sensitive to living in a pluralist world where the ground rules, by definition, are never quite as firm as they used to be. And the question is, will they ever be again? For that achievement, I think that the Pope's acceptance of the invitation of Her Majesty the Queen was courageous. His message was important and life-giving and well-timed. And it's for us, and indeed for the British churches, the British religious people of faith, and for the legislators to put it into practice.